On this episode of The Big Number, we're going to discuss Jaylen Brown criticizing the NBA referees and all the lack of foul calls impacting NBA teams and stars around the league. Plus, we're going to go spin our way through the NBA trade rumor mill. All that coming up right now on The Big Number. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Aberstroh, and as always, I am joined by my man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on?
Tom, you reversed me right before we started, and that made me laugh, which is a good way to start the episode. I'm feeling enjoyment. I'm feeling energy. And I'm feeling like, I have more than two words to say this week, which is more than I can say for some NBA coaches. So before we get any further, let me just hear it. I want to hear, put up some numbers. So hit me with it. Yeah. What is this week's big number?
This week's big number, Dan, is $35,000. That is the dollar amount by which Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics was fined by the NBA for calling out the NBA referees over the weekend. Dan, this was pretty big news. Jaylen Brown was very upset with the officiating after a loss to the San Antonio Spurs, in which he finished with zero free throws. And he said the inconsistency with the officiating is bleep, 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 bleep. Said a lot of that, a lot of censorship. And he tweeted it out. Fine me. I'm sick of this shenanigans. I'll just say it was shenanigans. It was not shenanigans, as you can see there. Blurring out if you're watching this on YouTube. Dan, this was interesting to me because someone in the sports betting community reached out to me saying, have you noticed the crash of free throws across the league and the scoring totals across the league? And I was like, Jaylen Brown just said that the inconsistency among referees is crazy, expletive. And in a game in which he had zero free throws and the Celtics had four free throws, I think the second fewest in franchise history. That Boston Celtics franchise has been around for quite a while. So just four free throws being second in anything. Quite interesting. So at Yahoo Sports, wrote up for a piece on Wednesday morning, went up. NBA free throws collapsed right after New Year's, right around this Jaylen Brown game in which he called out the referees for inconsistency. We've had a bunch of referee, criticism, public criticism of the officiating this season. We had David Adelman, Chris Finch, Ime Udoka, Marcus Smart flipped the bird at a referee and got fined. So Jaylen Brown is coming on the heels of not just a scoring crash, but in particular, as I did research on this story, it's also free throws. Free throws are way down at start around the new year. And that game, January 10th, I believe it was, for Jaylen Brown, was in the middle of this, in this crash. And then followed up a couple days ago with another Celtics game he didn't play because of a back injury, not because of the fine. He was out, and Joe Mazzulla said after the game, two words, six times. He said, legal screen, legal screen, legal screen, complaining about a non-call at the end of the game, a screen by Pascal Siakam, in which the last 2 minute reports, Dan, also agreed with him. Joe Mazzulla, I'm sure, is thrilled about this news. And so you can read this story at yahoosports.com. This huge drop in foul calls in the league over the past couple weeks. The betting community, as one person told me, they're printing money off of betting these unders because of the huge scoring drop. And we saw a huge cascade of unders cashing in the month of January. There it is, the graphic there, 33% over percentage in January. And so that means that 67% of the unders are cashing, where in translation, the betting community is, the sports books are trying to catch up with this scoring drop, this plummet out of thin air, and they can't seem to, find the bottom there. So big story here. I feel like officiating and gambling stuff, all of this, and just, unhappy superstars and Jaylen Brown. Dan, did you catch wind of this, or did you notice that the scoring totals had fallen in the new year, that the New Year's resolution apparently was to bring physicality back?
I hadn't. I'll be perfectly honest with you. Like the, you know, generally speaking, night to night, you know, you could be catching a, you know, any number of, you know, 123, 113 kind of games or whatever like that. And so like it, over the course of a full like 8-9 game slate, some of the ones that you don't catch, you know, like you sort of just check them, the box scores later and you're like, oh, well, that was a little bit, you know, that one's a little odd. I did notice that over the last week, we had three games where neither team broke 100, which felt like a rarity. And I was sort of like, huh, that's odd. But even that, so they like the Raptors Hornets last Wednesday was 97-96. Clippers Pistons on Saturday was 98-92. And then Pacers Celtics, the game, the illegal screen game, was 98-96. And so you're like, all right. But as you mentioned, you know, Jaylen Brown, you know, is out, you know, out for one game. You've had guys in and out of the lineup. You've got some of those teams are bad. So it's not shocking that they wouldn't score a lot of points. You've got 3-point variance. Like you can kind of explain it away in your head or like just come up with, if you're not thinking too hard about it or you're not tracking these things meticulously, you can say, yeah, that's might be that one off night that team's on like a 5-7 or whatever. And like, that's why their offense just totally ran out of gas or they couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. That was their one really rocky night. I think it's interesting to hear like, there's personally, just as a, and I don't know if this is indicative of many media members or not, but the idea of this is something that emanated from the sports betting community identifying a way, an officiating issue. Like those are two things that I think a lot of media people just don't really want to talk about all that much, right? Like generally the idea of like the refereeing, if you're like, oh, this team's getting a crap whistle or this team's getting a bad shake, you tend to look at those things and go, it all evens out in the wash. Like, and so some of the less sophisticated, you know, rules aficionados or like gambling people might look at those things and say, I'm not really locked in on what the total was for that game. I'm not really paying close attention to what would, in, you know, if even if those things do even out in the wash, if the overall offense is suppressed, I'm not necessarily paying a ton of attention to that because you still got guys going for 30 every night, right? So like on the whole, it doesn't leap off the page to you. But it's interesting when you said the thing that you said to me that this sort of clicked as you were talking about this story is like the idea that the NBA like brought physicality back. And so it made me think of two things. One, you noted in our show notes doc here was a couple of years ago when it was all of a sudden everybody scoring 50, 60, 70. And then like the air went out of the ball for a month. And it was like in the middle of the season, the way the rules were being called kind of changed and scoring started to drop. And the league was adamant that, you know, I'm shocked to hear that you think there's something going on here. Meanwhile, it was pretty clear that like you could start suddenly playing like, you know, rugby rules and no one was going to get calls. And so that like, I was like, oh, well, we have seen that before in the league midstream. And it also made me think about something Adam Silver said last month. I don't remember where he was exactly that he said it, but he said, the quote was, people love scoring. The one thing I think maybe the league over-calibrated in is offense, because what fans love too is defense. They want to see physical defense. And so like Adam Silver last month was like, maybe we need to adjust the sliders a little bit. And then all of a sudden come to find out the sliders maybe did get adjusted a little bit, just kind of nobody said anything about it.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown did not get the memo, apparently. And neither did Joe Mazzulla and the Boston Celtics. We'll talk more in depth about each team and how it might affect, in particular, teams or players around the league, this development. And I should say, you're right. This did happen a couple years ago, which is why it piqued my interest, is the idea that you could change the sliders mid-season, not tell the teams and players that, hey, we're going to let this slide now. Or that three-shot foul, you're going to have to earn that one. Or those drives, those linear drives down the paint, you're not going to get those foul calls anymore like you did before. And that feels like should be out in the open, that everyone is on the same page on that. And so if they did, and I'm not saying they did change the sliders, it seems that way, but I have no evidence to suggest that there was like a memo that went out to the referees that said, hey, sure, we're going to do this thing. But it does. I mean, when in October, there were 9 games where 9 teams that scored 120 plus points per game. In October, there were 10 teams. In December, there were 8 teams that scored on average 120 points a game. In this month of January, there's 3. Okay, so we went from like 10 every month that Teams are killing it out there with 120 points a game, and there's only three of them now in this month of January, and a lot of that is free throws being down. And look, to be fair, Dan, it could be, hey, everyone just magically figured out how to play legal defense. Just, hey, we're not going to foul anymore. And that's just how things go. But I do think that it's something we should talk about because it does impact our viewing experience, is that there's fewer foul calls, and it impacts MVP candidacies or all-star candidacies if certain players might be affected by the rule changes, and certainly teams. This is a big deal. So I think the NBA, like morally, or aesthetically, I like the idea of more physicality. I like the idea of more basketball, and I don't consider free throws basketball. Like, it's kind of a sideshow of basketball. I want action. I want basketball as jazz. Shout out to David Thorpe. And frankly, free throws are not jazz, right? It's not great when you have to sit around and watch a guy take three free throws because someone got in his landing zone. But I also understand that it's a safety issue too. But I do think that this is a big story, which is why we're hitting it on the big number. And you can check it out over at Yahoo Sports. It's a thing that I always like tracking league trends. And this is one of those things that the betting community, the teams, like I talked to a couple head coaches for this story, and they had certainly noticed that they weren't living at the free throw line like they were in October. In October, it was crazy, the free throw numbers that we were seeing in October earlier this season. And it started to come down a little bit as the season progressed. And then suddenly you're seeing a bunch of single digit free throw nights around the league, which was a huge rarity earlier in the season. So the slide,
That's something that can happen, right? Like, you know, we hear during every off season that there are officiating points of interest or points of emphasis, rather. Like, this is something that, as the league is getting ready to ramp up for the season, you know, we're going to really be paying attention to, you know, whatever, like the high five on a 3-point shooter, right? We're going to be paying attention to landing zone. We're going to be paying attention to, dislodging people on offensive rebounding opportunity or whatever, you know, insert thing here, hand checking. We're going to really like emphasize, you know, make sure that that is something we are particularly focused on as an issue. And then you see like a heightened level of enforcement on that at the beginning of a season. And then as the season wears on, you know, the emphasis maybe starts to wane a little bit. And, I think we have experience of those sorts of things happening. The idea that it's sort of so dramatic that you're going from, more than 23 free throw attempts per 48 minutes down to, you know, 19 this month, like that is a pretty dramatic drop that you notice. And again, it's the kind of thing that you notice more when you zoom out in the individual context of a game and you're like, yeah, there's two fewer free throws here or four fewer free throws there. It might not necessarily notice. But when there is four total free throws in a given game, or as Jaylen Brown in that instance where he's driving to the basket more than 20 times a game and he is a consistently downhill physical driver, the Celtics as a team don't tend to get to the rim a ton. They have long been more of a mid-range and three-point shot heavy team, but he is someone who does put the work in to get to the lane, get to the cup. When that's not rewarded, you hear about that a lot, or you see that a lot more. It becomes more glaring. And I think that's interesting to note, like, if you're not going to get that kind of call, which teams have, you know, oriented their offense a little bit more about generating free throws, which teams have oriented their defense a little bit more around applying that physicality and seeing what the line is and how far you can get away with. And then, you know, so who benefits, who might be in some danger there, which individual players, as you mentioned, like their stats that get, you know, they, if they were getting like an early season buff from those extra trips, are they going to get, you know, nerfed a little bit, brought back to the pack? Those are all things to kind of keep an eye on as you go forward here. And to say, like, is this sticky? Is this going to continue and persist, not just through the month of January, but like into the second half of the season and down into the stretch run? Because those margins can be, you know, really important for teams, you know, seeding, for, you know, home court advantage, for a tiebreaker, you know, all of those tiny margins of a free throw here and a free throw there could really be important for a lot of teams.
All right. So yeah, like teams are studying this in real time, meeting with coaching staffs on whatever officiating trends, calls, fouls that are being called, whatnot, defensive 3 seconds, what strategy is in the closing minutes of a game. Are you just going to camp out in the paint? Like, these conversations do happen behind the scenes. And so this story is a reflection of what I think is happening around the league, is they're trying to figure out what's going on here, not just the gambling community, but also NBA teams and stars like Jaylen Brown, to which I will say, just Illegal scream. Illegal scream. Illegal scream. We're going to talk about illegal screens or maybe other things that aren't being called in the NBA and how that is changing certain teams or individuals around the league right after the break. We'll be back right after this break. But first, if you haven't yet, please subscribe to our new YouTube channel. It's at Yahoo NBA. Please do that and enjoy all of our content, whether it's the KOC show, this show right here, and the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, smash that subscribe button. Dan, big number, $35,000. That's Jaylen Brown's fine for publicly calling out the referees for what he considered inconsistency with officiating. Zero free throw attempts for him over the weekend. He was not happy about it. Neither was Joe Mazzulla about the illegal screen from Pascal Siakam. So big story about the scoring drop and foul call drop around the league over the past few weeks. And you've got three little numbers to dig deeper into this story. Dan, what's your first little number?
First little number this week is 77. That's how many three-shot fouls have been called across the NBA since January 1st, according to PBP stats. January 1st, as you noted in your piece, that's kind of where the free throw attempt decline really starts to show up in particular. So that's 77 three-shot fouls. So if someone fouled while taking a three-point shot, that's across 99 total games, 77 in 99 games. It's an average of 0.78 per game, fewer than one per game. Before New Year's Day, there had been 632 three-shot fouls called across 496 games. That's 1.27 per game. So we've got a pretty big drop, about a half a call per game on these three-shot fouls. It's a pretty significant drop. And you're seeing, as you mentioned in the column, the proportion of fouls called on three-point shots is down by 26% from October to January. You've got guys who were pretty prolific at getting that call, like Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell, Kante George, not getting it at all since the start of the year. You've got Austin Reeves and Jeremy Grant, two guys who had gotten the bunch early in the season. Haven't been healthy, so they haven't been. That could impact how that's dropping off. But you're seeing it also guys who have been on the floor a fair amount. James Harden was drawn a foul on more than 10% of his three-point attempts in 2025. That's down below 9% in 2026. Similar drops for guys like Norman Powell, Steph Curry, LeBron James, and Jalen Brunson, all down about a point and a half or almost 2 points, percentage points, in terms of how frequently they're drawing those three-shot fouls. So you mentioned it a little bit before the break. I'm just interested what you think about that as a point of emphasis decrease, or is it maybe the league saying, like, yes, we started calling these three-shot fouls a lot because we want to make sure it's a player safety issue, right? You want to protect a shooter in the air. You want to protect the guy not coming down on a closeout defender's foot and rolling his ankle. You know, we all remember the Kawhi Leonard Zaza situation from that playoff series. So, like, it comes from maybe a nice place, but is this the league saying we got to kind of pull the reins back on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's been a contentious issue, hasn't it, Dan? Like the whole landing zone issue, the Zaza rule. And of course, we saw even in Tuesday night's game against OKC, San Antonio, where Wemby went up for a shot and came down. I think it was Kenrich Williams who was underneath him, and they were assessing whether it was a flagrant foul, and it turns out it wasn't, and it was just a regular foul. So when you see this, you know, these stats popping up, that the landing zone high five rule, when they slap each other on a three-point shot, that it might be being officiated a little bit differently, that's a big story. And I think one thing that you see a lot in the train is going by here, the hot take train is going by the house here in a sec. One thing you do see is, like, Dylan Brooks, you know how he just, like, clubs dudes on three-shot fouls?
Yes.
As long as, like, it's not, below the elbow, if you high-five someone, as long as it just kind of, like, hits the hand on the follow-through, it's fair game. And so you see guys like Dylan Brooks leverage that and try to, figure out a way to get you terrified of taking a three-shot foul. It's a dicey issue, you know, because you want to protect three-point shooters, but at the same time, if that same play happens around the rim and you land on someone, that's not a foul, right? If you land on someone's foot around the basket, it's not a foul. But if you do it at the three-point line, I know coaches, players, officials, they all have various opinions about how to adjudicate this play. So I think teams are still trying to figure that out. And what you're seeing is the James Hardens of the world, James Harden is still getting this shot quite a bit. I mean, 10% of his three-point attempts are ending in a three-shot foul. That's huge. You know, if you're taking 10 shots a game, three-point shots a game, you're going to get that three-shot foul at least once a game. And that's like three for James Harden. That's three guaranteed points. And for influence on a game, referee influence on a game, that's a big swing. You go from 0 points to three. So I think it's a really interesting dynamic that we're seeing is if the sliders move in any direction on the three-shot foul, it has huge implications on not just wins and losses, but scoring numbers. And James Harden on this streak with the Clippers, this kind of heater that they're on, doesn't seem like he's too impacted by it. But guys like Jalen Brunson, as I point out, and Donovan Mitchell, they're definitely feeling it right now. They're not getting that same call.
Well, and that's like, you know, to the idea of ethical basketball, right? The sort of like capital E, capital B, ethical basketball. I think that's often the argument put forward by proponents of that and detractors of the foul grifting, free throw merchantry, whatever, mercantilism. I don't know what the proper conjugation of that would be. But the idea like these guys are good enough to fill it up like any way you want it, right? They can get to the rim. They can pull up from mid-range. They can get to their three-point shot. They don't need that stuff to be successful. James Harden never needed that to be successful. Jalen Brunson, another player that comes in for questioning on this. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, these guys can continue to score 25 to 30 points even without this. And so if that is the case, and like, don't we want more often to see those guys needing to use their footwork, their quickness, their incredible shot-making ability, rather than kind of like spamming what seems to others to be an easy button? Those players would tell you in response, there's nothing easy about sticking your arms out and getting whacked 15 times a game. It's not particularly fun. If it was fun, everybody would do it. But to your point, like that's an area where if there is a dramatic shift, it could impact some players who are maybe not as adept at finding other ways to generate points. And you know, if you're the difference between, you know, an extra couple of free throws a game for some guys, that's, are you averaging 20? And then like, are you somebody that we talk about as like, oh, that's a 20 point scorer in the league. It's interesting. It's interesting to see some of those dynamics at work. Our second little number for this week is 12. That's how many teams were getting at least 17% of their total points from free throws on December 17th, according to NBA.com, NBA Advanced Stats. Since January 1st, that has dropped from 12 teams to 5 teams. Mm. So that, again, going in line with what you're saying, you are seeing teams generate a lower share of their points from the free throw line because they are getting to the free throw line less often. Notable among teams who have seen significant drops in how often or how much they're getting from their free throws, Jaylen Brown Celtics. They went from 13.3% of their points down to 9.7% of the Celtics' points this month have come at the free throw line. That is the lowest in the league. They're the only team under 10% of their points. So you can understand why.
That's
got to
be like
Brown,
a record, right? Like if they're under 10% free throw rate, that's got to be a league record. I have to look that up, but that is tiny.
We're going to have to look that up, yeah. But to some degree, that also, I mean, you know, Missoula ball is always about jacking up, you know, it's like jacking up the three-point variance, jacking up how many shots you can take and getting over half your shot attempts coming from three-point land. If that is happening, then you're getting fewer drives to the basket, fewer interior shots, less contact. In theory, those two things can be related, but still, that is it marks an outlier number that you're down under 10% of your points coming from the three-point line, or from the free throw line, rather. Also down, the Wolves. 17.2% of their points were coming from the free throw line before January 1st, down to 11.8. It's the second steepest plunge of any team in the league besides the Indiana Pacers. And then third team that I wanted to kind of highlight here is the Orlando Magic. They led the league in the share of their points that came from the free throw line on December 31st. It was almost 20% of their points were coming from the free throw line, which, you know, you think about it, makes sense. It's Paolo bullying his way to the rim. It's Franz Wagner bruising forwards. It's their bigs offensive rebounding. It's Desmond Bane downhill with those shoulders, right? Since December 31st, though, it's down to 16.8%. That's eighth, barely inside the top 10. So they're a team that I think is interesting in the context of what we were talking about, the margins, right? Like, the Celtics are a top two offense. The Wolves have been a top five offense for like 2 months, since Thanksgiving. They have elite three-point shooting. They've got elite shot creators. The Magic kind of don't. And if it's one possession, and now granted, they've had a lot of injuries. We talked about Jalen Suggs on this show. You've talked about the Paolo problem on this show. We've talked about Franz Wagner and the impact that he has. If they got all their guys healthy, maybe they're a top 10 offense, no questions asked, right? But that seems to never happen in Orlando. So this could be, and we're talking about a team that's fighting for home court advantage in the top four spot, maybe just say out of the play-in at a top six spot in the East, what your matchup looks like in the postseason, and a free throw here and a free throw there could really add up for a team like the Magic.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why teams employ or have consultants that work with them on refereeing or how to leverage the rules and study the rule book inside and out so that you don't have to worry about this stuff and they've already got it figured out. But if you're the Magic, you know, this is a moving target oftentimes, is what is being called, what isn't being called. And for Paolo Banchero, it's a huge piece of what makes him an efficient player. In the ideal of Paolo Banchero is that he gets to the free throw line a whole bunch. So Orlando is really interesting, especially because those margins are super thin between whether they have they make the play-in or they are safe from the play-in or have to go and fight for a playoff spot in the play-in. Magic are in a tough spot there. And so it's another team, Celtics, like you point out, they don't have that bruising style of play. But you know, when Jaylen Brown is getting downhill 23 times a game and shooting 28 times a game, and he doesn't end up with a single free throw with a guy who, you know, plays a physical brand of basketball, I can understand why he's very frustrated. But, another notable thing here on this front is, you know, we have seen in the last couple days that free throws, especially on Tuesday night, we didn't have any extremely high outlier free throw games, but we didn't see any single digit free throw, outings on Tuesday night. So again, moving target, teams are going to be monitoring this. Players are certainly monitoring this and we'll see what happens. But for sure, the Orlando Magic, they have to figure out how they can work any lever on their offensive repertoire to their advantage.
One team that played on Tuesday night is the subject of our third and final little number this week, 3.4%. That's how much the free throw attempt rate of the Oklahoma City Thunder has increased since New Year's Day, right? We're talking all about drops in free throw attempt rate. I know it's true. 26 of 30 teams have seen their free throw attempt rate decrease since January 1st. Three of the four teams that have had it go up have been pretty modest, less than 1% for the Wizards, the Hornets, and the Denver Nuggets. The Thunder have gone from a 26.6% free throw attempt rate to a 30% free throw attempt rate, which is the largest increase in the NBA. Perhaps unsurprisingly, they also lead the league in the share of their points that come at the free throw line since January 1st, just under 19%. And as you mentioned, on Tuesday, they just notched their first victory of the season over the San Antonio Spurs, 119-98, in a game that saw them make as many free throws as the Spurs took, 24, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going 11 for 13 from the foul line, another double-digit free throw attempt game for them. So the Thunder are interesting in this context, right? Because we had, everybody's been talking, you know, free throw merchant Shai has been a talking point going back for 2 years, right? And Chris Finch talked about it last season, talked about it in the playoffs, blew up very sort of notably this season, saying like got himself ejected from Wolves Thunder for saying like, you can't touch Shai, and then they foul all the time and we never get a call. And so there were people that have been saying like Chris Finch saved basketball by like blowing up publicly in a way that forced the league to like right size or, you know, reshape the way they were going to handle the Thunder. But if we're talking about a league where a little bit more physicality is allowed and a little bit more, you know, defenses can go a little further, maybe the math that the Thunder have done on this situation still works out in their favor, especially if, you know, now that we're talking about it, they continue to have their own free throw attempt rate go up.
Yeah. I mean, teams are already very frustrated and complain a lot about the physicality that OKC is allowed to play with. And this is also a thing that Jaylen Brown was upset about with the San Antonio Spurs. He kind of alluded, I don't know if you caught this, he alluded to, he has a conspiracy theory on this. He has his own conspiracies about this. He said, every time we play a good team, the officials call it differently. Essentially, he's saying that the NBA or officials don't want the Celtics. I'm just trying to connect the dots on Jaylen Brown's theory that like against good teams like OKC and San Antonio, they haven't had good free throw nights and haven't gotten a good whistle, which, you know, if like the Hornets were saying that, I'd be like, okay, right. Like small market team, don't have a lot of star power, but I'm, I, be very, very surprised if the league office was like, yeah, we definitely don't want the Celtics on our air come playoff time. So this seems like a big thing that a lot of teams are frustrated with the Spurs and the physicality that the Spurs defense plays with and OKC plays with. And of course, when OKC is like the only team that seems to be maintaining or, you know, increasing their ability to get free throws in the new year, that's going to rub some teams the wrong way. So good point by you. That was a really good find. I had not seen that number for your little number. Thanks so much for bringing that to my attention, Dan. So nice work.
My pleasure, Tom. It's what I'm here for. And I hope that now that I've brought that to your attention, you don't look to trade me in the next few weeks ahead of the February 5th trade deadline.
Yeah, we're going to have to see. We're going to have to talk to our producers, Sarah, Emmy, and Ryan, to see if we have any news that we need to kind of get into. But there's so much happening, dude. There's so much happening around the league right now with trade talks, Ja Morant, Anthony Davis. Giannis is booing his own crowd. And of course, there's just like a million things going on right now. So double thumbs down, Giannis says, which is a universal language, I think. And double thumbs up. After the break, we're going to talk about all of these guys in this trade rumor mill that doesn't seem to stop turning. Man, I did not foresee that in 2026, Rich Paul would be at the controls of every conversation in the NBA. But with this new Ringer podcast that he has with Max Kellerman, Dan, I have got my third eye open. Is Bill Simmons, is he orchestrating this, pulling the strings where he's like, I want to ruin the Lakers. Let's just get Rich Paul out here to just drive a wedge between Austin Reeves and LeBron and Luka and then have this whole locker room blow up situation. I don't know. I'm not saying that's what's happening, but I'm saying it's really interesting that there's a prominent, maybe the most prominent agent who now has a podcast and is openly talking about, hey, if Jalen Johnson, my client, you know, if the Atlanta Hawks want to trade for Giannis, kind of feel like Jalen Johnson could go that way to Milwaukee, would be an interesting piece. And then we have him saying, hey, Austin Reeves for Jaren Jackson Jr. swap. Like, hey, if Ja Morant's out the door, Jaren Jackson Jr. doesn't want to be a part of that rebuild. And then, of course, you know, he's brought up a few other names in the trade rumor mill and also represents Anthony Davis, who has this mysterious hand injury that we have not gotten clarity on what that actual hand injury is, just that there is ligament damage. He is not opting for surgery. And that does seem, in my opinion, look like a big trade maneuver. It's like, hey, all those teams that might want to trade for me and get me for the playoff push, don't worry, I'm not going to get surgery. And also, can he just send over a little contract extension too? That'd be nice too. My hand isn't that hurt. I don't know why we don't know what that injury is, but Dan, let's start with the Ja Morant stuff, because Kelly Uko, Yahoo Sports, reporting that the Miami Heat, the feeling might be mutual that the Ja Morant situation might be resolved. If Ja Morant has been opening and his camp has been open to the idea of going to Miami, there are a few teams in the mix, according to Kelly Uko of Yahoo Sports. So, Dan, what do you make of the Ja Morant stuff? And here is the report. The Grizzlies made Morant available in trade talks last week, and Miami has quickly emerged as an attractive trade destination for Ja Morant, who, by the way, $39 million this season, $42 next season, and then $45 million the season after that. So if you're acquiring Ja Morant, you're not just getting his on-court stuff, off-court stuff, but also the contract 2 more years after this at a little north of $40 million. What's your first thought about Ja Morant potentially on the trade block and moving to Miami?
Well, first thought was, wait a second, didn't the Heat hire the guy who made the offense in Memphis that Ja didn't like, the no-ball screen pick-and-roll offense, Noel LaRoche, that assistant consultant? And that is true. However, as people who've been watching the Heat recently might know, like, they've started integrating more pick and roll into that attack. Our guy Nekias Duncan from the Dunker Spot podcast has the note on that, where the first 10 games of the year, they ran about 19 pick and rolls per game. That went down to 12 in the next 10. The last 10, though, 27. And last night against, in their win over the Suns, a season high 38 pick and rolls per game. So some of that is like Tyler Hero comes back. Some of that is like, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's preparing the pathway for a new way of approaching the offense. So it's maybe not a non-starter, you know, that idea. The second thing that came to my mind was in Kelly's report, quote, additionally, Morant, with 3 years and $125 million remaining on his current deal, is hopeful of securing a max extension by next summer, sources said, which, I don't know what the max extension for Ja likelihood is. I can understand him being hopeful of that. Sure. I would say
you can also, that, you know, all hope for things. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. But we know we've talked on this show a number of times about like the underlying numbers on Ja's on-court performance being the kind of thing that make you wonder and worry, like, is the athleticism kind of not there at the same level as it was earlier in his career? And I know KOC had written about Ja earlier this week and noted like some of the metrics indicate like, you know, the shots at the rim are coming back up. Some of the true shooting is coming back up. And that's great. Like that's like a 6 or 7 game sample. And then he hasn't played again. And now he's in Germany and saying he's not playing again. So we'll, you know, TBD on how much that uptick continues or to what degree. But that's an awfully big, it would be a big swing for Miami. Miami, again, kind of continuing to be in the middle, you know, like the nice win over the Suns. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's sort of where they've been. Like they're too good with Bam Adebayo in that defense and with, you know, Norm Powell now, you know, Tyler Hero in years past. Like one all-star creator and Bam is kind of, with like some nice pieces around, is enough to be decent. It's really hard to get like significantly higher than that. So then the argument would be Ja as like a talent play big swing. I think some of the people who wonder how Ja would fit in Miami, I think there's some reasons to be interested in that. But the idea that like you're trading for him and taking on the contract and the expectation of a max level extension after that, you got to feel really good about what you're getting and that the performance that Ja Morant's going to put on the floor for you is going to be, you know, again, all-star, all-NBA level. And we just haven't seen a whole lot of that recently.
Yeah, I do think that the Miami Heat are interesting because Pat Riley always wants to go big game hunting, right? He always wants to get that superstar and bring him into the fold. And they don't really have that guy. You can talk yourself into Bam and Tyler being that guy, but Ja Morant for sure is more of a international superstar, kind of the bigger name that might entice Pat Riley as he, you know, rides off into the sunset here, is like trying to figure out one last shot at being a title contender. And right now the Heat aren't there. And so maybe Ja Morant can be that. I'm skeptical. I'm not the biggest Ja Morant fan. On-court stuff has not been great over the last few years, but who knows? We'll see what happens with Ja Morant. I do think you should read the whole story. The Eric Spoelstra is the coach of Team USA and Ja Morant wants to play for Team USA. And there's that angle too, as Kelly reported too, which is interesting. But shifting over to Anthony Davis, look, it's really tough situation, especially when you consider the framing of the Luka Doncic trade. If you're the Dallas Mavericks, can you trade Anthony Davis for much that you can get excited about right now, or do you hold on to him and hope that this situation rectifies itself and you come back next year with Kyrie Irving, Anthony Davis, and Cooper Flagg? According to Shams Charania here, the Mavericks, Anthony Davis will not require surgery after a second opinion, which is interesting because if it's a 6-week timeline to heal, that puts him right up against the playoff picture. And so if you're going to be acquiring Anthony Davis, maybe you can talk yourself into him playing more than the 29 games that he has played since getting acquired last year for Luka Doncic. So I'm convinced that if the Mavericks trade him right now, he is going to get a Trae Young package. Like he is going to get basically expiring deals and they can get off of his salary. And I don't think he's going to get much more than that, considering his injury record, the fact that he is currently injured, and the fact that he's got a lot of money left on his contract and he's going to be wanting a contract extension. So I could see the Dallas Mavericks, their best offer might be the Wizards offer or something similar to that, where there's not picks involved. It's just salary relief going to Dallas and they can kind of flush this thing through their system and say, look, we're building around Cooper Flagg. But Dan, then there's the whole Kyrie Irving thing where he's going to be trying to come back at the end of the season. They got to figure that out. To me, it's just a nightmare situation that the Dallas Mavericks have to deal with after the fallout from the Luka Doncic trade. And it's not to say that Luka has been all, you know, sunshine and roses over there in LA, But I can't imagine a worse case scenario that the Dallas Mavericks in their nightmare scenario could have dreamed it getting as bad as what we're seeing now, that they, I don't even know if they can trade Anthony Davis for a pick at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that like the immediate that Anthony Davis himself immediately responded to this and was like, lies and half truths. Like, don't believe what you're reading on this app about my surgeries and what I'm having and what I'm not. And that like there the gap between the initial report of he's likely going to need surgery and actually, no, they just got a second opinion while I was writing that. It's interesting to me. I don't know exactly what to believe in that regard. Yeah, I think you noted the like kind of nebulous nature of the injury. We don't have a whole lot of clarity on what if it's okay, it doesn't require surgery. Cool. So then what actually is the return to play timeline there? And like, how would that positively or negatively impact what you get from Anthony? I mean, like all of it is a lot of balls in the air, right? What do we, there is the question of what you can expect from AD the rest of the season and what his value would be, right? There's the question of the looming potential return for Kyrie, which at different points, different people have said he's ahead of schedule, he's on schedule, he's behind schedule, who knows what the schedule is. And then of what value is that for the Mavericks this season, where this year they control their first round pick and next year they don't. And so like the idea of, is this your best opportunity to go into the tank and to potentially get another high level running buddy for Cooper Flagg? Also, you've been like more decent than terrible for a lot of this season. So you kind of can't catch the Indianas and Sacramentos of the world. So, but then again, you were there last year and then the lottery gods smiled upon you for Cooper Flagg. So it's all a lot of uncertainty there. But yeah, to me, I think the point that you made about the Trae Young package and kind of what a star who is not a superstar anymore and who has, you know, a large amount of money coming to them and or player options coming to them and it has warts, right? Like our guy Mort wrote about this last week, I believe, like the challenge of trading for or trading, making deals and building around star players with kind of warts or brown spots on the apple, challenges in terms of how their games fit into the modern league and build and what it is to build around them. Trae Young was sort of the impetus there, but you could go with Ja Morant for this, a lot of the similar things. You can go with Paolo Banchero, as you've talked about. And Anthony Davis, yeah, when on the court, can still provide elite top, you know, top 10 caliber two-way impact, but you can never count on him to be on the court. And like, not saying that's through any particular fault of his own, but that makes figuring out how to maneuver around him, how to get anything of substantial value for him, how to value what to offer him for years down the line, all of those things become really tricky. And so then, as you mentioned, like the Trae Young, the upshot of the Trae Young deal for the Hawks was essentially, we don't have to make that decision anymore. We don't have to figure out the answer for like, what's the right price point for Trae Young? What's the most palatable deal we can offer? What's he most likely to be cool with? And then that allows us to build around him, which also, by the way, we've yet to really be able to show we can do that consistently. If you can find that kind of opportunity for AD, if you're the Mavericks, maybe getting out of the business winds up, I mean, it hurts now, but maybe it winds up having better long-term outcome for the franchise. It will never not suck that that's the return you got for the guy you turned Luka Doncic into. But also at this point, like, sure, that's going to be true no matter what. This is like, you know, you can't fall prey to the sunk cost fallacy on that one, right? Like, you'd have to make the best decision you can moving forward with the information you've got. And the information you've got right now is just like, man, we cannot anticipate having Anthony Davis on the court for more than like 3 consecutive weeks for the next year. And so like where you go from there, I don't know. It's just it's a lot of balls in the air and it kind of feels like a lot of them are going to come crashing down.
Yeah, it's Rich Paul has got to do some magician work behind the scenes to make this a great situation.
Can I say something very quick on that? Because you mentioned the Jaren Jackson Jr. component of this. I just love this. So the thing was on his podcast, the Max Kellerman podcast, Game Over with Max Kellerman. He had said like, if the Lakers are going to build around Luka going forward, which they are, you need that anchor, and Jaren doesn't want to be part of a rebuild, right? So he talks about Jaren Jackson Jr. as like, you target that guy, and maybe you trade Austin Reeves for that guy because Memphis would definitely want to pay Austin Reeves. So that's like the framing there, right?
Sure.
Jaren Jackson Jr. gets asked about this I think it was Joe Varden of The Athletic wrote it when they were, he's over in Berlin. And Jaren Jackson Jr.'s answer was, quote, "There's just a lot of podcasts," which I love as an answer. It's true, inarguably true in this crowded space. He says, quote, "At first, I didn't think it was real. You have to figure out if it's real, usually now. And I'm not as versed technology-wise as these people younger than me. I was figuring out if it's AI, deepfake, all that stuff. That's all I had. I didn't really have much of a reaction." Does feel a little bit like if, you know, there's, you know, agents and like power brokers around the league, you shouldn't have to wonder if what they're saying is AI deepfake stuff. Like you should have a better sense about what's being grounded in reality. But I guess that's also maybe the world we're living in. But this Jaren Jackson Jr. being like, quote, there's just a lot of podcasts. I feel like that's going to be running through my head for quite a while now.
No notes for Jaren Jackson Jr.
Perfect.
Samesies. You know, I feel the same way. It's like, what? Wait, who's saying what? And on what show? What is, in what world is this? I could not have imagined this 5 years ago. Not like last year that we would be dealing with these news stories. And it's coming out of a Max Kellerman, Rich Paul podcast in which they're standing on like an opera stage or sitting on, I should say. And it's just, it's great theater. Like, quite literally, it's great theater to hear Rich Paul pulling the strings around or attempting to. And then LeBron James has to, after the game, say, "Hey, man, that's him. He's got his own opinions. He's his own person. And I hope everyone can understand that and see that Rich Paul is his own person. But also, I'm paying this guy to not screw me, you know, to not ruin the situation I have with the Lakers." And the Austin Reeves situation, he says, "Hey, look, me and Austin, if you see us on the bench, we're super happy. We talk every day." You know what? Truth serum, I don't think that the Lakers love what Rich Paul said, because they just have to address this. They have to constantly talk about it and address it. And JJ Redick already had enough on his plate, and then to have to deal with this outside noise. So,
although in fairness, JJ Redick kind of lived by the podcast, you know, maybe died by the podcast. You know, it's tough. It's tough out there.
Yeah, that should be the big number right there, is the number of podcast companies that the coach of the Lakers started. And so in a way, it's all coming full circle here on the big number, which I got to say, next week, I can't wait to talk about which trades happen, because I kind of feel like it's around the corner, Dan. We're going to have some trades here, because it just seems like everything's swirling, including Giannis, who just double thumbs down, booing himself or booing the crowd who booed him. Inception. Booing.
Booception.
Booception.
Well, what I loved about that, though, so they get booed because they're down like 30 in the first half of that game. The first possession of the second, there it is, two thumbs down.
They just shoot it. It's so good. But it's so good. Boom.
But who, so he's doing it after scoring on Julius Randle, who got in trouble when he was a Knick for thumbs downing at Knicks fans at Madison Square Garden for booing him. Like, it's all
is this
connected,
AI?
Tom.
Is this AI?
Is this deepfake? There's too many
is
podcasts.
Is this deepfake? Are we sure this happened in Milwaukee, or is this part of?
I think a lot of people are now responding to many things that Giannis is saying by like, "Is this really happening? Did this really happen?" Now, and okay, thank you for pulling this up, producers. This is a note that Giannis has been doing thumbs down. He's been booed. They're depicted here, if you're watching on YouTube, against the Sacramento Kings. One important clarification: that's on the road. He's being booed by Kings fans. And not at your home arena.
Important clarification.
Being booed by your fans when you're down by 30 to a Wolves team playing without Anthony Edwards or Rudy Gobert. So I think there's a slight difference in those two things, but perhaps I'm being a little bit, you know, just classic clickbait sensationalist media noting the difference between those two things. I don't know. Yeah, it feels like most of what we hear out of Milwaukee right now doesn't seem awesome. I think that seems fair to say. Doesn't seem awesome. And I'm very interested in, you know, we are about to, you know, all-star starters will be announced next week. I would imagine that Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to be one of the starters for the East/Team World/Team whatever. And I imagine he will also be the only representative from the Milwaukee Bucks in that situation. So And I imagine he's going to be asked quite a bit about what all has been going on. He seems to have had very little filter in what he's saying about all these things recently. I imagine that's going to continue, and I'll be interested to hear what comes out of it and whether Bucks fans will find themselves thumbs downing and booing it.
Yeah, it seems like we just hit a new chapter in this saga. Once you are booing your hometown crowd and the crowd
doesn't
is booing
seem great.
You and you're doesn't seem great. It does feel like the Sam Amick report, the walk and talk with Giannis was not 6 days ago. It feels like it was 6 months ago. That's how much has happened in the news cycle in the NBA, which I can't wait for next week. But that is going to do it for the show today. I want to thank everyone for watching us on YouTube, watching us on our new YouTube channel at Yahoo NBA. Go catch us on the Fast channel, wherever you get your Fast channels. We're on there too. The Dunker Spot, the Kevin O'Connor Show. Go check those out. As well as making sure you subscribe and rate us 5 stars wherever you listen to this show on podcast. Thank you to Emmy, Sarah, and Ryan behind the scenes for making this show beautiful and lovely and on time with that kind of deep research on the Sacramento Kings. Thumbs down. You can only find it here at Yahoo Sports. Great job on their part. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Until then. Illegal screen.
Two thumbs up for all of our listeners. Illegal screen and 2 thumbs up.